This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning and thanks for staying with us. I'm Koo Soo Chuang, joined by Wong Shoning and Philip C. Now, in about half an hour, Wong, you'll talk to the new chief executive of the insurance company, Tune Protect.
Yeah, today's going to be a very interesting conversation because as we know, Tune Protect is very related to AirAsia and focuses on travel insurance. Now, since there's hardly any travel going on, what is the future for Tune Protect and can they pivot away from this dependency? And I think it's do tune in that's going to be happening after the 8 o'clock news bulletin.
Yep, as Wong was saying, tune in to Tune Protect. Now, this week, the Narendra Modi government unveiled a $500 billion, that's T, $500 billion US dollar budget for 2021. Now, they're trying to dig the third biggest economy in Asia out of a pandemic slump. Under the budget, Finance Minister Nirmala Sitharaman announced plans for
high government spending, bank privatization, liberalization of the insurance sector, and protective tariff increases over the next financial year. However, although businesses and investors have cheered the stimulus, no small bill, analysts say the budget did not address job losses, hunger, and rising pressures on the farming and rural sector. The budget was unveiled amid ongoing protests by Indian farmers in New Delhi against new agricultural laws. Ironically, the budget also cut allocation for rural development by 10%. The farmers' protests have been given a social media boost by Riri, Rihanna, and Greta Thunberg, who both tweeted their support for the protesters in recent days.
Okay, so get some insights into the dynamics at play in India. We speak to Dr. Pradeep Taneja, a lecturer in Asian Studies at the University of Melbourne. Dr. Pradeep, what does the budget tell us about the Modi government's priorities for economic recovery?
Good morning. Well, the budget's number one priority, of course, is to get out of this slump. I mean, remember between 1991, when India first began its economic liberalization, until recently, India's economy was growing at over 7% on average. You know, so for nearly 30 years on average, 7% growth rate. And because of the pandemic, this financial year, India's GDP is likely to contract by almost 8%. So that is a significant setback. So I think for the government, the number one priority is to return to growth. Now, we know that IMF is projecting that in the next financial year, India will grow at more than 11%. But I think for that to happen, it needs some help from the government. And therefore, I think the focus of the budget is very much on returning to, you know, high growth rate.
Yeah, you talk about the economic recovery, but there is a lot of criticism that it doesn't go far enough to address economic inequities caused by the pandemic. So in your assessment of this, how much pressure is there on Modi and his government to address livelihood concerns, especially for vulnerable groups?
Well, there is always, a trade-off between growth and equity. When governments try to boost growth, it has a negative impact on equity in terms of distribution of wealth. And certainly, the inequity has grown as a result of the pandemic because the poor have been affected disproportionately by the pandemic. And last year, the government of India, I think, did sort of spend a fair bit of money on providing free food and, increased spending on healthcare, etc. And in this budget also, the finance minister has doubled the spending on healthcare. So the health budget is going to double. But generally, there is much less emphasis on distributing freebies in this budget, more emphasis on increasing the productive capacity of the Indian economy. So, for example, in the budget, the finance minister said that the government's capital expenditure, will increase by 26% this year. So revenue expenditure is actually decreasing, but capital expenditure is going to increase substantially. And that is to increase capacity for future growth in the Indian economy.
And Dr. Pradeep, there's this new focus, right, on attracting FDI, foreign direct investment. But at the same time, India also has a reputation for protectionism. So is there real change now?
The government, I think, is keen to attract foreign direct investment because it knows that to create, not only growth, but to create jobs. Because part of India's problem has been that Indian economy, even when it was growing rapidly, it wasn't creating as many jobs as are needed to essentially, to look after the poor and vulnerable people. So government is trying to create, more jobs. But these policies, unfortunately, in my opinion, are not going to lead to any significant increase in foreign direct investment, because foreign direct investment is a function of not just, you know, government actions, it's also a function of linkage of supply chains. And India is not as well connected to the global supply chains as, say, for example, China. So it's going to be difficult to significantly boost investment in manufacturing, but that certainly seems to be government's priority, I think.
Yeah, Doc, before we talk about farming reforms and the legislative reforms there, can you explain this mystery for us? Because the Modi budget calls for the economy to be fiscally conservative, trying to cut debt. But why is he trying to be fiscally conservative when he should be really priming the economy?
Well, to be honest, I don't see the budget as being fiscally too conservative, because India has, for a long time, has had a goal of containing fiscal deficit to below 3%. And in fact, there's a law in India which requires the government to return to 3% fiscal deficit. And in this financial year, fiscal deficit is going to be 9.5%, which is historically quite high. So government have, because revenues have plummeted as a result of the pandemic, so government is having to borrow. But we also know that if the government borrows too much, it will increase inflation. And if you have higher inflation, the poor are going to be the most affected by that. So there is a balance between, you know, stimulating the economy by spending more, which I think the government is trying to do in this budget. But at the same time, they also have to be concerned about interest rates and the impact it will have on inflation.
Yeah, so a lot of competing challenges there. I want to bring your attention to the protests in New Delhi over agricultural reforms, right? They've garnered quite a lot of international attention. What are their main contentions with the new agricultural law, and what are they seeking from the government?
Well, the farmers have some genuine concerns. I mean, one of the things that the protesting farmers are worried about is that these new laws, the three new laws which were enacted by the Indian Parliament in September last year, that these laws will eventually lead to the abolition of the minimum support price. Minimum support price is a price at which the government guarantees to buy agricultural produce, particularly grain. And that has for a long time in India provided some sort of security to the farmers that, you know, if they're productive, they would be able to sell their produce to the government, even if the market price, global market prices for, say, wheat or rice fall below a certain, you know, level, government would guarantee, you know, and buy their produce at a minimum support price. Now, government is saying that they don't intend to abolish the minimum support price. The farmers worry that this will eventually lead to that, because essentially these laws are designed to deregulate Indian agriculture and to allow private sector, particularly large companies, into the agricultural sector. Because remember, in India, it's been very difficult for large corporations to become involved in agriculture. Agriculture has been kind of protected from large corporate interests. But these laws will allow private companies to enter the agriculture sector. And the farmers are worried that the entry of big companies and the freedom for these companies to buy agricultural produce directly from the farmers will reduce their bargaining power against large corporations. And therefore, I have some sympathy with that argument. And I think the government does need to listen to the farmers.
And Dr. Pradeep, I mean, we're shifting gears slightly, but India has been seen ramping up its vaccine diplomacy by donating millions of vaccine doses to neighbouring countries. What's behind this strategy? And do you think it'll be effective in establishing India as a counterweight to China in the region?
Well, what the Indian government is trying to do, I think, here in terms of, you know, diplomacy, or vaccine diplomacy, as some might have called it, is to actually play to India's advantage. Remember that India produces 60% of the world's vaccines. So whereas China is very good in manufacturing, and China has become the factory to the world, India has become something of a pharmacy to the world. And India's strengths in producing vaccines, and not just the locally developed vaccine, but also the AstraZeneca vaccine developed at the Oxford University, India is producing large quantities of that vaccine. And government had promised at the beginning of the pandemic that when vaccines are developed, India would help its neighbors. So it's part of India's foreign policy of neighborhood first. And therefore, the government is trying to help a number of poor countries in South Asia in particular with these vaccines. So it's part of that. India is also selling vaccines to other countries. So countries like Turkey and others who can afford to buy and pay for the vaccine, India is selling vaccine, but it is offering free vaccines to its neighboring countries.
Okay, Doc, thanks so much for your time. That was Dr. Pradeep Taneja, a lecturer in Asian Studies at the University of Melbourne. I don't know whether you guys have seen this, right? But infection levels in India are dropping drastically for no apparent reason whatsoever, right? And just what Doc was saying in terms of India playing the big brother role, kind of like the godfather, right? Don Corleone, right? He helps out the other South Asian neighbor, whether they be Bangladesh or Sri Lanka or even Pakistan. And you know what? They've got the other big dog in the room with China, and China just basically grabbing land as in, you know, willy-nilly, right? Tibet, even Taiwan and things like that. There's more to it than meets the eye in that part of the world. And you just, you know, this whole vaccine diplomacy thing just strikes a chord with all the conspiracy theorists, don't you think?
I don't know. I'm not going there because I think in terms of vaccine.
Well, I thought it was Friday, so I thought we could go there.
Well, but I mean, the reality is that India is the pharmacy to the world, right?
It
like
is.
He highlighted,
they
manufacture 60% of vaccines. But in terms of the herd immunity, yes, it is an article from the FT and it's a part of that long read. And I think that tells you how bad COVID-19 was in India. And there was massive underreporting in terms of infection rates. But I think one sad thing is that the disparity between the have and the have-nots in India have just widened incredibly because of COVID-19.
85 million new poor just because of the COVID. Okay, 7:46. We'll come back after this with Wakas Adenwala of the Economist Intelligence Unit on Democracy in Malaysia. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.